ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump departs the White House this morning, bound for Arizona and the public memorial for Charlie Kirk.
Security preps in high gear as nearly 100,000 people are expected to descend on State Farm Stadium for the public memorial service of Charlie Kirk. The 31-year-old rose to fame as a conservative voice and debater. He was fatally shot while at an event earlier this month at Utah Valley University.
It's ABC's Jacqueline Lee in Glendale, Arizona. Multiple sources tell ABC News the Trump Justice Department shut down an investigation involving border czar Tom Homan, where he was recorded accepting cash from FBI agents posing as business executives. There's been no comment to ABC, but the White House and the FBI denied any wrongdoing in statements to MSNBC and the New York Times. Canada, the UK, and Australia have all said they recognize the Palestinian state as part of a coordinated effort to preserve a two-state solution. Expected to be a major topic this week at the UN. This is ABC News. UK fighter jets flew over Poland as part of a NATO air defense mission. That's after more than 20 Russian drones recently crossed into Polish airspace. ABC's Selena Wang has more.
The UK defense secretary calling it a successful operation to defend our allies from reckless Russian aggression. And just days ago, three Russian fighter jets accused of violating Estonia's airspace, flying for about 12 minutes over NATO territory.
New Jersey's one of two states holding a gubernatorial election this year. Tonight, Republican Jack Cittarelli, Democrat Mikey Sherrill will meet for their first debate in what's expected to be a close election to replace term-limited Phil Murphy, who narrowly beat Cittarelli in 2021. The other gubernatorial elections in Virginia. Musician and songwriter Sonny Curtis died. He wrote the theme song for the Mary Tyler Moore Show. He also performed as one of Buddy Holly's crickets. He was 88. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
My problem is I don't ever eat fish fries, so when I do it, I overdo it. I ordered a large perch, I ate everything on my plate, and I felt like I wanted to die. And now I don't want to eat fish again, maybe ever.
I know it's a staple to get breaded fish, but if you don't get the bread on it, you know, you can kind of get away with eating more.
I'm not trying to gain weight for football here. I'm like, I just want to have a nice meal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. The city of Racine has released public records on Microsoft's hyperscale data center in Mount Pleasant. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
The documents were released following a lawsuit against the city for failing to provide information about water usage estimates for the facility. Environmental nonprofit Milwaukee Riverkeeper filed a request in February seeking information on water use at the Microsoft data center. The city records release showed it will require an estimated 8.4 million gallons of water each year. Michael Greif is with Midwest Environmental Advocates who filed the lawsuit. He says the city failed to respond for more than 200 days and then claimed the information was confidential.
That's 6 months in which the public was deprived of that information, which prevents them from being able to assess the impacts of this project on their community or their pocketbook or on the local environment.
Racine officials say they delayed releasing the information until they determined if it violated contractual agreements. Water for the data center will come from Lake Michigan and will be supplied by the Racine Water Utility under an agreement with the Village of Mount Pleasant. Supporters of the data centers say they create jobs, grow communities, and advance local manufacturing sectors. The lawsuit challenged the common practice of tech companies like Microsoft of requiring non-disclosure agreements with local governments, which can often conflict with freedom Freedom of Information laws. The Microsoft Center is being built on the former Foxconn site in Mount Pleasant, which was farmland until recently. Greif says similar data centers with facilities exceeding 1,000 acres in size are being proposed across the state, including a $4 billion extension to the Microsoft data center in Mount Pleasant, just announced this week. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of clouds out there on this Sunday and south winds. Some thunderstorm chances in the afternoon. Highs will warm into the mid-70s. Tonight, showers and storms will wind down. Mostly cloudy skies, lows of the upper 50s. Rain returns Monday. Right now, it's 64.
Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, I'll be joined by Professor Howard Schwaber of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We discuss what went down on Friday at the CDC and what that portends for expertise in America. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. From Hobart to Bay Settlement, 97.9 WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley. We're trying a few new things this time around. We've got some new theme music. We've got a video format that we haven't used in the past. We've got Abe. My oldest son, Abe, is on the board. Say hey.
Hello, hello. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So we've got some new things that we're trying. We would love your feedback. So after the show or before the show, if you've got thoughts to share, we would love to hear it. But in the meantime, we've got a really serious conversation to have today. It's a very sensitive and polarizing topic, the assassination of Charlie Kirk on September 10th at Utah Valley University. And more importantly, we're going to talk about where we go from here as Americans. This is not going to be a typical political discussion. We're not here to debate policy positions or to score partisan points. We're here because a young father of two was murdered while exercising his First Amendment rights. And whether we agreed with him or not, and I did not, I mean, I'll be straight up with you, that is an attack on free speech, and it's an attack on all of us, regardless of our political beliefs. So with me today are three voices that I believe can help us navigate this moment with wisdom and perspective. We have Craig Carlson. He is a police officer with nearly 30 years of experience in law enforcement. I told him I was going to disclose this. He was a Trump voter one time, right, Craig? One time. But a lifelong Republican up until recently, and you really understand both the complexities of investigating political violence and the concerns of conservative Americans, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's always two sides of every story, and now I learn more.
That's right. And speaking of two sides to every story and learning more, we have Tracy Mangold joining us. Tracy is a former high-ranking Republican leader in Wisconsin. She's currently a political activist. She's seen our political discourse evolve over decades, and she really understands the institutional challenges we face. Tracy, thanks for taking the time today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. And as I mentioned earlier, Abe is producing, so he won't be able to say much, but he probably won't be able to stay quiet either during this discussion. And the cool thing about having Abe on board is that he's a public school teacher, but he also attended college during the rise of Turning Point USA. So he can really speak to how political movements really intersect with educational spaces. So thanks, Abe.
Glad to be here. And yeah, Charlie Kirk was completely unavoidable when I was going through college. He was everywhere. So,
and still is.
Still is, but just a really bizarre week. It's been a very bizarre week watching this happen.
It has. And there is so much discomfort right now and tension. So I want to make sure that we set some ground rules and we talk about what this conversation will and will not be. This will be a space for honest reflection on political violence and its consequences. It will be a place where we examine how we got here and where we might go. Our conversation will honor the humanity of victims while also grappling with hard truths. And we will attempt to find common ground in defending democratic norms. Hard to come by these days. What we will not do in this conversation is use it as a platform to justify or minimize violence of any kind. I want to be very clear about that. This will not be a space to spread unverified claims about the investigation. There's so much disinformation floating around out there. That is not going to happen here. This will not be an opportunity to demonize entire political movements or parties. And it will not be a forum for inflammatory rhetoric that could contribute to further division. And the reason I wanted you all here is because each of you brings such a different perspective to this moment. So I really want you to speak honestly and openly, while remembering that behind every political position is a human being deserving of dignity and safety. So let's get into the meat of it. Let's start with the facts as we know them. Hey, on September 10th, Charlie Kirk was addressing a crowd of approximately 3,000 people at an outdoor event at Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah. And while engaging in a debate with a student, ironically about mass shootings, he was shot by a gunman positioned on a campus building rooftop, and he was pronounced dead at a nearby hospital. We know that Tyler James Robinson, a 22-year-old Utah resident, was arrested 2 days later and is being held without bail at the time of this recording. The FBI has indicated that bullet casings found at the scene contained what they described as anti-fascist messages, although the full scope of the suspect's motivations still remain under investigation. Rumors and misinformation are abundant, but we are thin on facts at this point. The response has been swift and, in many cases, deeply troubling. We've seen celebrations of his death on social media, doxing campaigns targeting critics, employees fired for their online comments, and inflammatory rhetoric from political figures all across the spectrum, including at the very top with Donald Trump. And that continues to escalate right up to the moment we're taping, with recent news out of Washington, D.C., that liberal groups will be targeted for political misinformation. Most concerning of all, polling suggests that significant minorities of Americans, particularly young Americans, view political violence as sometimes justifiable. That number appears to be increasing. So this is where we are. And the question before us is, where do we go from here? So I want to invite my guests in and to start by asking each of you, Tracy, probably you first, to share your initial reaction when you heard the news that Charlie Kirk had been shot and later killed, and what lens your professional experience, your political identity, your personal beliefs shaped how you processed this tragedy.
My husband actually sent me a text while I was cooking on the day it happened, and it was shock. Incredulity. Just disturbed, you know, that this is happening. I wish I could say I'm surprised. I think that the climate that has been increasingly hostile the last few years. I mean, it's complicated to go back like where these things all started, but I think that the fact that it's not shocking is what's more disturbing than anything. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to clarify that when we say it's not shocking, we're not saying that we condone it. We're not saying that this should have happened. We're not saying that violence is the answer. I think a lot of people are, you know, when we say that rhetoric, and I've been saying like rhetoric can cause damage. And, you know, I think I've said some things online about how, you know, rhetoric can make these things occur. And when people, I'm not saying it right, but when people say that, they jumped on me for saying, oh, you're advocating for his death. You're advocating for the violence. No, that's not what I'm saying. We have free speech. We can say what we want, but with that comes the caveat that repercussions, circumstances, consequences happen. You can't just run into, well, now I said, somebody said you can run into a theater and say there's a fire and not have consequences. But I was raised where you can't run into a theater and run fire, yell fire when there is no fire, right? And that's where we're at. You know, we're speaking without consequence. We're speaking our minds. And it's great to have opinions, but we have to realize that those opinions come with baggage. And we have to be responsible with the things we say. Yes, we have First Amendment rights. Thank God we have free speech. But there comes responsibility with that. And that's what I think a lot of us are trying to say, is that there's a responsibility with the things that we say, especially if you're up there in the public eye, more so probably than anybody else. It goes for all of us who are out there, who are activists or whatnot. It's just to be mindful. And I hate saying that. I hate saying that I'm not shocked, you know, and it's hard to, I'm sad for his family. I'm sad for his children. He should not have died. He should not have been killed. This is not our country. This is not who we are. But we also have to have a discussion that there is a lot of hostility, and that we do, you know, when people are saying we need to take the temperature down, and there's people that are fighting about that, you know. And right now it's just, that's the problem, is that when we shut communication down, that's when more problems arise. And that's what's going to happen, is with these people attacking and saying, well, you can't say this, you can't say this. Oh my goodness. We're going to bite off our nose to spite our face by doing that.
It's frustrating to me when people say we need to take the temperature down. Totally agree. But then they ratchet the temperature up. That's what I heard the governor of Utah doing this weekend. We need to settle down. But then he started talking about the radicals on the left. And I thought, ah, that is not settling things down. That's riling things up. Craig, I see you nodding your head. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I don't really listen to the news and stuff a whole lot. So honestly, when I learned this, I was on the phone with my daughter, and about the same time, I looked in my rearview mirror and some guy was coming after my squad with a metal pipe. So, you know, I know that there's a ton of violence out there. But, you know, my position, I think we get desensitized so much that, okay, this happened, you know. Unfortunately, it's happening way too often. But it's like, all right, what do we need to do from here? You know, I am in no way condoning anybody being murdered like that, regardless of what side you're on. You know, you do have the right to free speech and should not have to be out there and feel like, you know, what's going to happen to me. You know, my job is different, that I don't know if I'm going to come home every night when I go to work. But I don't think normal people should have to feel that way, especially if we're talking about what they really, truly believe in.
Something really interesting, I think, about your perspective is you really weren't familiar with Charlie Kirk before all of this.
No, not really.
Yeah. So you didn't have all of the baggage that people like Tracy and I have had, and Abe has had, knowing what some of that rhetoric was. Abe, what were your thoughts?
So having, it was a mix. Earlier that day, I had been talking with my 11-year-old kids about, for the record, I'm a teacher. I don't have like a plethora of 11-year-old kids. I was talking to my students, and we were going through ALICE training, which is active shooting training. And we were talking about what to do if someone comes into the school. And as we were, almost every single day that we have this conversation, there's a new mass shooting. It's a daily occurrence at this point. Mm-hmm. So that was already sitting with me. And then seeing the news come in, and having experience with Charlie Kirk, knowing who he was before, and largely by his, you know, brash, provocative statements, which get pushed out on social media and perform really well because they drive engagement, it was a huge mix of emotions, and I'm still not entirely sure how to process all of it. But I think, Tracy, you said earlier that the really shocking thing was that it's kind of hard to feel something at this point. And it's not like this person, it's just, as an American, I talk about it so often. I, you know, talking to 11-year-olds about what to do if someone's trying to kill you, and then seeing someone die, it's like, you know, I was just telling people about this. This is not some sort of new surprising thing to me, and it's hard to get a new surprising emotion out of me, and that is the new surprising thing that is like haunting me, is that this is kind of normal, and it shouldn't be.
It's become so much more normalized in recent times. Hey, and I so appreciate you all sharing your personal reactions and the different lenses that you use. When we return, we're going to talk about how the story has been covered, how political figures have responses, and what it tells us about the state of our discourse. This is the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
...97.9 WGBW and WGBW.FM.
Lakeland Care is proud to be named one of the top workplaces in Wisconsin for 2025. But what really sets us apart is our commitment to providing personalized support for frail elders and adults with disabilities. Our care teams go above and beyond to help our members live their best lives with dignity and independence. Interested in becoming a member? Visit your local Aging and Disability Resource Center to see if you qualify. To learn more, visit www.lakelandcareinc.com. Lakeland Care. Together, we build better lives.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Frank Hermans. When we moved here, I called the Y because my daughter was like, I don't know, 7 years old. And I said, hey, I'm calling about your beginner's gymnastics class. I'm 40 years old. I've never had a gymnastics class. So do you think I should start there? Frank, I get nothing. On the other end, it's just silence. Even after she knew I was kidding.
You should tape that.
Come on. And I did take the class and I did really well.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and we are talking about the assassination of Charlie Kirk, how political violence is affecting us, and what this means for our future. Joining me for this somber conversation is Tracy Mangold, a former leader in the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a political activist, as well as Craig Carlson, a police officer with nearly 30 years of law enforcement experience, and a former Trump voter, I should mention, as well as my oldest son, Abraham Lierley. He's a public school teacher and he's our producer, but he's piping in here and there as well with his opinions because he was in college as Turning Point USA was gaining momentum. In our last segment, friends, we talked about our personal reactions to the news of the assassination. I want to turn now to the greater response, both politically and in the media, including social media. We've heard a lot from both parties, from different sources, lots of misinformation out there. How do you assess the immediate political responses from both parties?
You know what? I think it's important to say, and it bothers me, you know, being in my position as a police officer, that a lot of times it's a court of public opinion that really gets out there and catches fire. So right now, there's not a whole lot known about what exactly happened, how everything happened. And for both sides, or you know, to get out there and start blaming the other side without anybody knowing anything that really happened, you know, that really is bothersome, especially, you know, the leaders, the governor and police chiefs and stuff. I mean, let's let the investigation get some information out there, and then we can talk about what's going on, what really happened.
Even the media. I mean, I think even on CNN, they were saying stuff about the supposed murderer and without any substantiation. And, you know, I have a journalism background. That was one of my degrees. I was a producer. And we would have been our hand slapped, you know, by my professors for insinuating anything without proof. We are in such a different climate media-wise from when I was in school and what I was taught and what I grew up with that, and I'm obviously no longer involved with the media, but it's just, it's disheartening because we are, the media is supposed to be the purveyor of truth. They're supposed to hold, you know, the fire to the feet of those in power and hold them accountable. And, you know, we're not doing that. They're not doing that. And it's disappointing.
I was so disappointed when I saw Kristen Welker on Meet the Press this weekend, and Spencer Cox was just putting all this information out there that has not been substantiated, including he was really pointing a finger at the suspect's roommate and talking about his trans identity and really making that a big part of his interview. And it was just so inappropriate and irresponsible because it's not about that. And, right. But, you know, she didn't call him on it. She didn't stop him. She didn't say, let's stick to the facts here, Governor. And that is irresponsible.
Yep.
What do you think, Gabe?
I think that it's not the first time that it's happened. And it very well could be because, I mean, like we're saying it's not what's happened, but I mean, it could be. It wouldn't be surprising if somebody who was, it would not be a crazy surprising narrative. But to reach for it before there's anything that's brought to you, before there's any facts, especially after the Wall Street Journal's article earlier, where they said there was transgender ideology on the bullets, and they listed the, what was it, up, right, down, down, down arrows that were carved on, which is a video game button combination from the game
Helldivers. Thank you for interpreting that for us. Yeah.
No, I saw that and I'm like, oh no, I've seen this before. I've seen this before, and I don't like where I'm seeing it again. And then the other substantiation was that they had TRN on the bullet casings, which is the manufacturer of the bullets. Correct. So, I mean, for the Wall Street Journal to take the Wall Street Journal to take that information and then run with it as if it's fact, when it's not. It's completely unsubstantiated, and they wouldn't give a source, and then they were immediately proven wrong. But they've already planted that idea. The idea is already out there. Yeah. So it doesn't matter if it's true or not, because people believe it now.
Right. And to Craig's point earlier, it's that court of public opinion. Think of those two suspects, those early suspects who were questioned and released. Their names were put out there. They were displayed by national media sources. And, you know, the FBI has really bumbled this investigation. I don't think anybody can really refute that. I don't know that this person would even be in custody if it wasn't for his family members turning him in. So, like, what a mess. And how do you pay reparations to those people who, I'm sure, are dealing with the consequences of having been named?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what they are going through with that. Obviously, you're going to jump on every lead you have, but those are leads, they're not arrests. Even the head of the FBI came out and said they've arrested somebody. They didn't arrest anybody. You know, it's all that information. Just you get that little nugget of something and they just run with it without confirming what is true and what is not true.
It really makes you wonder what you can trust and what you can't. And I think we all have been around social media enough to know that you really can't trust a lot of the stuff that you see there. Yet it's still so pervasive and really persuasive.
That was the problem. Yeah.
I was just going to say, it doesn't need to be, it can be obviously false, but it's the avalanche of information. It's the seeing it and then seeing it again and then seeing it again. And it eventually just builds up in your, it's like a plaque. It builds up in your brain without you recognizing it. And it becomes a reference point. And then that reference point becomes a jumping off point for further information. Like just the way that information is consumed at this point, you can't take a step back. You can't verify everything that comes across your feed. It's not possible.
Right. And the fact that we have to, that we're pushed into the situation where we have to verify. I mean, it's like with Brian Kilmeade on Fox saying that homeless people should be killed. I mean, everybody was like, is this AI? Is this real? And I'm like, we checked it and it was verifiable. It was real. And it was just like, we're at that point though, where everything is like, well, is this AI? Is this this? Is it that? We never were in that kind of a situation years ago, and we're in such a different frontier now. It's disturbing. It's scary to me.
And even if you're questioning it, it's still, when you hear it, it sits in your head.
Yeah.
And if you hear it enough, it does start to become real. And for people who don't get their media sources from lots of different places, they tend to just hear the same thing over and over again. It's almost like they get indoctrinated.
And that's where Trump is the master, because he repeats, repeats, repeats.
That's right. That's right. All right. We've been discussing the immediate responses to Charlie Kirk's assassination, the political statements and the media coverage, the social media reactions. But when we come back, we're going to step back and look at this moment in a historical context. So we'll continue this conversation with Tracy and Craig and Abe after this short break. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
From Denmark to De Pere, this is 97.9 WGBW. As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump departs the White House this morning, bound for Arizona and the public memorial for Charlie Kirk.
Security preps in high gear as nearly 100,000 people are expected to descend on State Farm Stadium for the public memorial service of Charlie Kirk. The 31-year-old rose to fame as a conservative voice and debater. He was fatally shot while at an event earlier this month at Utah Valley University.
It's ABC's Jacqueline Lee in Glendale, Arizona. Multiple sources tell ABC News the Trump Justice Department shut down an investigation involving border czar Tom Homan, where he was recorded accepting cash from FBI agents posing as business executives. There's been no comment to ABC, but the White House and the FBI denied any wrongdoing in statements to MSNBC and the New York Times. Canada, the UK, and Australia have all said they recognize the Palestinian state as part of a coordinated effort to preserve a two-state solution, expected to be a major topic this week at the UN. This is ABC News.
The Badgers self-destruct.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports College Football. The Wisconsin Badgers lost at home yesterday to the Maryland Terrapins, 27-10. The Badgers had a pass intercepted, then a punt attempt blocked. Maryland also blocked a field goal and racked up half a dozen quarterback sacks. The oddsmakers had Wisconsin 10.5-point favorites on this one. Head coach Luke Fickell.
That's a really difficult one, and we did not play well today, and I'm the first one to start with that. I can't get a punt blocked and expect that you're going to be able to create and generate the momentum that you need to in complementary football, and I think that's it kind of starts right there.
Baseball, Bryce Durang with a clutch RBI single, top of the 10th, to lead the Brewers to a 3-2 victory over the Cardinals last night in St. Louis.
The Durang at bat, that two-strike slider that he took after being called out in the game twice on really marginal pitches. That's like, it gave me chills.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy. The magic number now one with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you're like me, you never need to hear the word y'all ever again. It was a fun novelty as we indulged a Southern culture in a show of unity. Those of you who do use or like the word will be happy to know there's a new holiday film called Deck the Y'alls. Sigh. Talk about shoehorning a word into a title. At least there's a good cast and an award-winning one at that. Variety reports that the film stars Jessica Chastain, Octavia Spencer, and Wanda Sykes. Chastain plays a New York City baker who falls for a Southern gent, now it all makes sense, and heads south to spend Christmas with his family, and it's going great until she meets the overprotective mom played by Spencer, who also happens to be a celebrity chef. Chastain and Spencer were both nominated for Oscars in the Best Supporting Actress category in 2012, with Spencer winning for her role in The Help. Chastain would later win an Oscar of her own in the same category for The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Filming begins next year, y'all. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of clouds out there on this Sunday and south winds. Some thunderstorm chances in the afternoon. Highs will warm into the mid-70s. Tonight, showers and storms will wind down. Mostly cloudy skies, lows in the upper 50s. Rain returns Monday. Right now, it's 64.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
My problem is I don't ever eat fish fries, so when I do it, I overdo it. I ordered a large perch, ate everything on my plate, and I felt like I wanted to die. And now I don't want to eat fish again, maybe ever.
I know it's a staple to get breaded fish, but if you don't get the bread on it, you know, you can kind of get away with eating more.
I'm not trying to gain weight for football here. I'm like, I just want to have a nice meal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we get to know one candidate for Secretary of State, another for the state Senate District number 17. All coming up. Join us.
Mattenair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and we are talking about the assassination of Charlie Kirk, about how political violence is affecting us and what this means for our future. I am here with Tracy Mangold. She's a former leader in the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a political activist. I'm also here with Craig Carlson, a police officer with nearly 30 years of law enforcement experience. And Abe is producing. He's a public school teacher. He's Abe Lierley, my oldest son. But he is Gen Z, so he has grown up in the Turning Point USA era. So lots of different perspectives here. If you missed the beginning of our conversation, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Substack, and civicmedia.us. All right, friends, we've talked about our personal reactions. How do you think this compares to other acts of political violence in American history? What do you think, Tracy?
I think this one is, I hate to use this phrase, but a turning point. And I'm not trying to be funny here or glib. But I do think it is a turning point compared to the ones in the past, which were all horrific, all unconscionable. Mm-hmm. This one, I think, is going to sit with us for a very long time because it's creating a huge rift, more than we've already had. I think people are jumping to conclusions. I worry that things, and I'm not trying to be a doomsday here, but I worry things are going to get worse before they get better. Mm-hmm. And I did post that I think it's not going to be one side that comes to the table to try to affect change. It's going to take all sides. It's going to take all parties involved, all factions, everybody willing to meet in the middle and talk and have the hard discussions, but be willing to listen to one another rather than fight, rather than cut each other down and demonize one another. It's going to take everybody. And I just right now, I don't see that happening. But it's going to take that. It's not one-sided. It's going to take all of us working together to affect change. And that's what scares me compared to other things in the past. I mean, I don't think we've ever seen it to this extent.
Right. And Craig, you're a police officer. So when things get out of hand, that becomes your problem. What's your take?
Well, I think the most important thing is let's stop doing all the finger pointing and let's just sit down and get both sides to realize that we do need to do this together, listen to each other, and come up with some solutions, because obviously we can't have this stuff continue. You know, even local things now, you know, we're setting up a security for local speakers here in this, you know, safe little city of Green Bay that you never would have thought we'd had to do that stuff before, but something needs to change.
Thank you. Thank you for the job that you've done for so many years and for keeping us safe.
Yeah.
Hey, Abe, I'd love your thoughts, and then I'd love for you to play the clip about that Ronald Reagan gave a brief speech when he found out that George Wallace, his opponent, his rival, had been shot. So take it. Take it from here.
Well, it's rough to get followed up by Ronald Reagan. Let's just start with that.
Yes.
But I think that I haven't heard anyone outside of Facebook and outside of Twitter and Reddit, you know, outside of the places
social
where you can
media.
Find outside of social media, the places where you can find the worst possible takes. I haven't heard anyone express this sort of this joy at the direction we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're all looking for this sort of get together, honest conversation. that has proved so elusive for Americans for the past 40 years of gun violence. It's never the time to have the conversation. There's something that just happened. We need to let that sit for a moment. It's not the time. And I think that the only time we're... it's so hard to get to that moment without leadership on both sides being willing to say, okay, let's sit down. You can't... It doesn't work as a decentralized kumbaya moment. That doesn't exist. You need to get somewhat... The leaders of each party need to get together and make this happen. This is not
something that can
happen individually.
And in the past, that's what has happened. I mean, I think about like 9/11 and other tragedies that have happened in this country. And the leader has always said the same thing that you all said, together. We have to come together in order to get past this. And to me, that's the defining point here, that our leader is not unifying us, he's dividing us. Play that Reagan clip, please.
Give me one second.
Isn't this an outgrowth of the hatred that seems to have been injected into what has in the past has been simply normal competition and normal rivalry and certainly election year emotionalism and all? But if something is to be done about this kind of tragedy for anyone, isn't it necessary that all of us review our own attitude and say, yes, it is possible for men and women of goodwill to differ, to have opposing viewpoints, to discuss and debate them, and perhaps never to come to agreement on them. But as God is in his heaven, do we have to hate each other to the point that people with less balance are stimulated to deeds of this kind?
That's what a leader sounds like. That's, I think, that's definitely what my expectation had been in the past.
Yeah.
It feels so almost not noteworthy. Like, yeah, that's what you should say.
That's what you expect. Now,
well, I mean, he was called the great communicator for a reason.
He was, but it wasn't just him. I mean, play the Josh Shapiro clip. So Josh Shapiro's governor of Pennsylvania, his house was bombed while he was set on fire, while he and his family were there. And here's what he had to say afterwards.
Last night, we experienced an attack not just on our family, but on the entire Commonwealth of Pennsylvania here at the governor's residence. We do know that this attack was targeted. We don't know the person's specific motive yet, but we do know a few truths. First, this type of violence is not okay. This kind of violence is becoming far too common in our society. And I don't give a damn if it's coming from one particular side or the other, directed at one particular party or another, or one particular person or another. It is not okay. And it has to stop. We have to be better than this.
Abe, what did you hear in that clip?
I heard a man who, just a couple hours ago, had evacuated his burning house with his wife and kids, not pointing fingers. Which I can't even imagine being strong enough to do that.
I can't imagine how afraid he must have felt and angry, but to just step back and say, we're going to wait, because that's what a leader does. All right. Why don't you play the last clip we have of Donald Trump's reaction and his response to the nation after we've discovered that Charlie Kirk had, in fact, died?
From the attack on my life in Butler, Pennsylvania last year, which killed a husband and father, to the attacks on ICE agents, to the vicious murder of a healthcare executive in the streets of New York, to the shooting of House Majority Leader Steve Scalise and three others, radical left political violence has hurt too many innocent people and taken too many lives. Tonight, I ask all Americans to commit themselves to the American values for which Charlie Kirk lived and died.
Tracy, how does this moment in history compare to other periods of high political tension that you've witnessed in your lifetime?
There's no comparison. I've never seen it like this. I mean, even though there's always been political dissension, there's always been disagreement, there's always been civility, there's always been care. I think we've reached an impasse. I think, you know, when you have a leader like Trump, who there's no empathy. And of course, you know, getting back to Charlie Kirk saying that, you know, empathy is a woke term or what have you. I'm paraphrasing here.
The full quote was that he doesn't believe in empathy. And then if you continue, normally the quote that's getting posted is that he thinks empathy is a harmful term. But he goes on to say that he prefers the term sympathy. But
they're very we've different. Even weaponized the word empathy.
Right. I think that's what disturbs me more than anything, because empathy is a very human emotion. It's a very necessary emotion that we need to have. And it kind of boggles my mind. I mean, in a very different perspective, remember when the Challenger blew up? And I remember, you know, I was much younger, but I remember Reagan getting on the TV that night and he addressed the children of the world. And when you have a leader, and what I'm trying to say here is when you have a leader that addresses the least of us, the little ones, you know, and whether what your politics were with Reagan, at the very end of the day, you knew he cared. You knew that there was there was humanity in the man. You might not agree with a lot of the things he did, but you knew that he did fundamentally care about this country and the people in it. And when you compare him to what we have now, there, I don't see any of that. There, it's like, do you have any compassion? I don't see it. And I, you know, you can be a strong leader, but if you don't have empathy and compassion and love for the people that you're serving, I don't see it with this administration. And that's a huge fundamental problem. And I don't know how we get away from that, because now he's introduced a whole new type of non-civility, but he's just, it's made it very complicated. I don't know how to say it any other way than that.
Well, that's a great question. I mean, Abe, how do we get away from that? This is your generation now coming into this. You are living in a whole different time than we had, than when we grew up, where we had three channels and we all got the same news. So how do you, you've learned how to cope with this from a young age. How do you, where do we go from here?
No one else can answer this, and you're going to pass it to me? I'm the producer.
Save us, Abe.
It's okay
to say I don't know.
I don't think any... Does anybody know? Has anybody heard...
Craig?
Has anybody heard anything non-vindictive? Or, like, I haven't heard a positive outlook from an elected official on either side, or...
I think what I've seen multiple times, and like I said, I don't really scour this for political stuff, but... people are saying, I want 9/12 back again. The day after 9/11, everybody was bonding together, coming together to help and heal and stuff. And we definitely need more of that.
People are wishing for the day after 9/11. All right.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. All right, friends. We have talked about our personal reactions to this tragedy. We've examined the political and media responses, and we've looked at how this moment fits into the broader arc of American history. And those clips are just, it's so amazing to hear the voices of Ronald Reagan and Josh Shapiro and Donald Trump just saying it in their own words. So now comes the hardest part. What can we do about it? I mean, really, what can we do about it? It's easy to point fingers. It's easy to say it's somebody else's problem. But each of us, whether we're in law enforcement, education, political leadership, or just people trying to make sense of this moment, we all have a role to play in either healing our democracy or allowing it to fracture further. This is going to take all of us. So when we return for our final segment, we're going to talk about solutions. Not just what politicians should do, but what each and every one of us can do. Tracy, Craig, and I will be back with our final thoughts. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
Hey, Hey, it's Amanda. And we all know that Northeast Wisconsin has some of the best events around, but trying to find them all can be tricky. So here at WGBW, we decided to do the work for you. Prevent boredom on any night by going to WGBW.fm and click events in the top right corner. You'll never have to spend forever scrolling to find out what's going on in your area. And if you got an event to share, hit us up by emailing info at WGBW.fm, bringing you local news and timeless hits while giving you the 411 on what's happening in New Wisco.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Frank Hermans. When we moved here, yeah. I called the Y because my daughter was like, I don't know, 7 years old. I said, hey, I'm calling about your beginner's gymnastics class. Yeah. I'm 40 years old. I've never had a gymnastics class. So do you think I should start there? Frank, I get nothing. On the other end, it's just silence. Even after she knew I was kidding.
You should tape that.
Come on. And I did take the class. And I did really well.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by US Aging.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on wgbw.fm/contest-terms. Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with Tracy Mangold, a former leader in the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a political activist. Craig Carlson, a police officer with nearly 30 years of law enforcement experience. My oldest son, Abe Lierley, he's our producer. He's also a public school teacher. We're talking about the assassination of Charlie Kirk and how political violence is affecting us and what this means for our future. We've had a lot of great conversation thus far, but ultimately, it ends with this. How do we advise our friends, encourage and support our neighbors to take part of healing rather than division? Go ahead. Hello? Whoever wants to grab it. Craig, why don't you take it?
I was just going to say, we need to have a better way to get people to just listen to the other side. Because if somebody automatically is talking and you don't agree with that, people are shutting that down. They don't want to listen. And again, to solve this problem, it's going to take both sides coming together, understanding that there's faults in everything we do. There's faults in every political stance that we have. But we have to understand that people need a safe place to express themselves, to feel that they can do that without having to worry about getting shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, like I said earlier, you see the end consequences of this. You see the worst of people when they are, you know, at their wit's end and they're frustrated and they've got nowhere else to go. When you heard about the news, you mentioned this earlier, some guy was chasing your squad down with a pipe. This is your life. So, yeah. Hey, everybody. Officer Carlson says listen. What does Tracy Mangold say?
You know, we have to have conversations. We can't allow them to shut us down. We have to not shy away from the hard conversations. You know, when I bring up to people, where was Trump when Melissa Hortman and her husband were shot down? And that other couple, and I apologize, I can't think of their name right now, in Minnesota.
Hoffman, John Hoffman. And Yvette Hoffman.
And then the school shootings that have happened, and the teachers and the children that have died. Where is our leadership commenting about that? We are becoming a very callous society. And, you know, as Craig said, we do need to come together. We need to have conversations. We need to not shy away from it. And so we need to keep these people's names at the forefront. You know, what happened last week was horrific. It was inexcusable. Don't condone it in any way, shape, or form. But we also have to recognize and pay tribute to those others who have died as well. All violence, all political violence, all violence that, you know, takes the life of another human being, is wrong. Categorically, it is wrong. Doesn't matter what side of the, we're all human beings. And I think we've forgotten that we are the United States of America.
United
exactly. States. And we're sitting here criticizing this state or that leader or that. And I'm so tired of it. We are a country of Americans and we need to start acting like it. And I think that's what we have to keep pushing our agenda of unity. And, you know, on the right, that's become a cuss word of sorts. And I hate hearing that.
Well, and unity doesn't mean everybody coming into my camp. Unity means everybody listen to each other and find those places where we can explore common ground.
Right.
And to your point about Melissa Hortman and John Hoffman and their spouses, and I work in Minnesota. I knew Melissa Hortman. We worked together on initiatives. Some of my friends were on that list, so that's personal to me. So thank you for mentioning that. And I couldn't agree more. We need to say their names. And speaking of saying their names, Abe, you mentioned the school shooting that happened on the same day that Charlie Kirk was assassinated, but we haven't heard too much about that. What are your thoughts about how we move forward?
I'm with Tracy here. I feel like as we go through each year, and as a teacher, as we go through each school year, the cost and the numbers of mass shootings rises exponentially almost every year. Not exponentially, but it's growing. It's growing year after year after year. And it gets really hard to... It gets hard to sort of place one piece of violence in America within this giant tapestry of violence that has been constructed over my lifetime. And I think for a lot of young Americans out there, that's what we're feeling. Like, it doesn't feel new or terribly exciting or all that strange. I think the strangeness for a lot of us is, why are we talking about a podcaster so much in this situation rather than children or rather than people who were elected members of government? Why is... And I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm saying that if we're going to extend this to one person, we should extend it to everybody, you know? But no one is calling for us to embrace the ideals of the kids that were shot or calling Melissa Hortman the best Americans. That's not the message that's coming from the top. And it's really hard for us as a people to steer ourselves to greener pastures when the hands that are actually on the wheel of the car are swerving the other direction. Or at least that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
You're so right. And beautifully said from the mouth of a public school teacher who is with 11-year-olds all day long. Well, friends, one last thought. Political leaders in this moment, what would be your short message to our leaders in this moment? You have 10 seconds Craig.
Oh, boy. Let's figure out what the problem is. Let's talk to each other. No more finger pointing, please. And just listen.
Tracy.
Do better.
Do better.
Do your jobs. Serve your constituents, not the administration.
Well said. Abe.
Talk to each other. Mm-hmm. Not in front of a camera.
Yeah,
right. If I see your concessions come out as short form videos, I'm going to tear my hair out.
Yeah, and you don't have all that much hair left, so we had to end on a light note. Hey, friends, thank you all for taking the time to have this important conversation today. This is a hard topic to talk about. Obviously, it's hard for our leaders to talk about, but it starts with us. So I want to encourage our friends to continue having these conversations, and we will see you next time.
If it happens in Wisconsin,
local news and timeless hits, WGBW, Denmark Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump departing the White House en route to Charlie Kirk's memorial in Arizona.
Really a great man. He's a young man, but a great man, and we look forward to it. It really is. We want to look at it as a time of healing.
He'll speak at the service along with Vice President J.D. Vance and several cabinet secretaries amid tight security. More than 70,000 people expected to attend. The president also voiced support for Pam Bondi, the attorney general, after he criticized her on social media for not bringing criminal charges against his political opponents. Multiple sources tell ABC News the Justice Department shut down an investigation involving border czar Tom Homan, in which he was recorded accepting cash from FBI agents posing as business executives. The White House and FBI denied any wrongdoing. The UK, Canada, and Australia have publicly recognized a Palestinian state, saying they're doing it to preserve the possibility of a two-state solution. This is ABC News.